This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Good to be with you today. Matt, Brett here. Brett, the last about hour or so, they've been going through some of the unseen footage of the Capitol terrorist strike by the far-right Trump fans, the traitors to America. And if you were a sane person at all, this is a no-brainer of a slam dunk of an easy lay. I am shocked. I understand that the Republicans are going to try their hardest to play saying, well, this isn't constitutional, although they're making that argument up out of thin air. It is constitutional. And as a matter of fact, the founding fathers were very clear that it was constitutional. John Quincy Adams even said, you should be able to impeach me for the rest of my life for everything that happened while I was in office. So it's pretty clear this was intended to be used even if the person was out of office. But they're trying to make this argument up because today, any argument that this wasn't exactly what Trump was trying to do is pretty much been blown out of the water. I'm not expecting his legal team who, just absolutely bumbled their way through their first day to pull up any kind of defense to this. I mean, it sounds like what they're trying to do is frantically put together videos. I don't like a tribute video or something like that. He's really a nice guy. But today, and I'll get into this with Stein coming up here in just a little bit, the argument they made, and boy, did this make a heck of a lot of sense. Remember back in right before the election in Texas, there was an attempt to drive one of the Biden buses off the road by a bunch of Trump fans.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
They basically and Trump applauded that. A lot of Republicans, including Marco Rubio, applauded that, thought it was great, thought it was funny. Ha ha. They're getting them. And I mean, this was actually pretty dangerous. I mean, there was a decent chance they could have killed someone if they rolled the bus. And yet this was kind of encouraged. It becomes impossible to say, oh, this was a one-time thing. What are you talking about? When you go back to that and then you see Trump's reaction to that, encouraging it, saying, yes, more, more, more. And
yeah, didn't he just say, oh, we love Texas?
We love Texas. Yeah, we love Texas. Look what you guys are doing. We love you. If you want me to love you, well, guess what? Yeah, I'll get into this with Stein. It'll be interesting to see if he puts up his usual counterpoint on some of this stuff.
I don't know how you can when, as you said yesterday, it was, Barry Zuckerkorn from Arrested Development doing the defense for Trump?
And the cornballer.
That's very good.
The cornballer. I got out today. All right, so, I mean, we are now into, 10 days? We're going to be in a 10-day loop here where basically it's been too cold to really go out for an extended period of time. Today, I did get indoors to the Edina Dome. What?
Will they let you in?
Oh, my. That heathen came in here. How dare he? yeah, I was. And that was nice. That's a big one. Holy cow. This has been the trend, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people know what I'm talking about. But in case you don't, there are pretty much the wealthier school districts a few years back started installing these dome facilities, air pushed up dome like the old Metrodome used to be, where it's pressurized inside and it holds its shape. And, so you have an indoor turf field to which you can, kids can play soccer, you can do hikes, you have even stuff like baseball and stuff like that. Football practices in there. It's kind of it's nice to be rich, isn't it? Yeah, it's kind of one of those things with your school district. And there's a few of them that are out there. Some of them are not as big as other ones. That one in Edina at Braemar is massive. Holy cow, is that one a big one.
What a shock, Edina. Yeah. We have to build the biggest dome.
I think that is a full-size, European-style soccer field length dome. That is big. It's they got one in Minnetonka. That I mean, and once again, many of them do offer the opportunity for you to come in for free. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't say it like that. I'm going to bet there's one or two that you have to pay to get in, or have to put up a punch card or something like that. But some of them are free. Edina's are listed as parks, so they fall into the parks and rec category. I mean, that in Edinburgh, which is the place over kind of by where Fuddruckers used to be over on 494 and France Avenue, back up in that area. That their parks are actually Edina parks, so they, you know, it's part of their parkland. And so some of them you can get in for free, some of them you can't, but that's one option you have. I did get, like I said, this last weekend, I did get out to the Minnesota Historical Society, get out to the Mall of America. I look like a freaking genius for Valentine's Day. I got some tickets to the MIA, so I'm going to go over there. I'm going to hit the Hennepin History Museum this weekend as well and see their brand new, exhibit on heroes, local heroes. So I'm going to do that this weekend. And so I'm trying to find there are options you have, and of course the malls. You know, I did Mall America, but the Dales and most of the malls are open like that. U.S. Bank Stadium? Is U.S. Bank Stadium at all open?
You would think they would have, like, walking around the thing, even if they charged a couple bucks. They could make some good money.
Get away from our football stadium! You taxpayers think you have some right to this. Get out! Go, go, go! Shoo, shoo, shoo! Get away! Get away! That'd be my guess.
Well, yeah, the Metrodome, as we talked about, you could walk around that thing, or they did rollerblading around the dome.
They did rollerblading. They had and you could. I was there one time, and they had the dude on the roller skis, and that actually looked. It was kind of weird watching him come down the concourse of the old Metrodome, but different strokes sort of thing. But yeah, those guys will go around. I mean, on wheels. I can't believe that took very long to go around the concourse at the old Metrodome.
It didn't take that long to even walk around. Yeah.
No, it's not like a hockey arena. Hockey arena is actually pretty small. Even like, walking around the X is not a, it's not a huge long hike. Mariucci is not a long hike. But yeah, the Metrodome, the old Metrodome was a little bit longer, but it took them only 2 minutes to get all the way around the thing on wheels. So yeah, there are options out there, and I encourage you to try to do it because let's face it, you've already watched everything on Netflix. Hulu, although I will say I'm enjoying immensely lately the TCM, Turner Classic Movies on HBO Plus. They've got Turner Classic Movies. They've got all these great old movies on there. I've been enjoying that. Time Bandits.
You got my attention. This is through HBO Plus.
HBO Plus, if you scroll down, once you get to that screen, scroll down, it will say here are the hubs. One of them is Turner Classic Movies, and they've got a ton of great movies on there.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm a fan.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. That's where you go. All right. That you can either watch HBO Max or go exercise. I'm done. I got two road stories for you to begin with. The first of, okay, so this last weekend, one of my daughters has a boyfriend who does not live near town. So what happens is their parents of this boy will come on down and we'll meet halfway between our house and their house. And, we'll do a trade off. And then that night I'll go pick up, we'll meet back again. It's kind of that, a play date for lack of a better way to say it, but it's parental supervised for the most part. But I was on the roads a lot this weekend on Saturday, particularly because I had to go, and a little more than an hour drive to drop off the kid, and then I had to go back, drive back, and then next that evening as well. I don't know if you've seen – I mean, it's bad enough during the traditional morning and afternoon drive times, the amount of absolute insane drivers going at speeds which are – way unsafe. I mean, it's not like you're on the Autobahn where people are expecting people to go fast. And people are expecting you really maybe 70 miles an hour. I mean, I think that's kind of rate of speed on a lot of highways. And these people are clearly going a lot faster than that. But when I was on Saturday, I was on 35W north of Lexington. I'm heading up towards the Forest Lake Split. And a guy went past me in the left-hand lane. If he wasn't going 100 miles an hour, he had to be at 99. I mean, he had to. I think he was faster. And I say this as a guy. I used to drive when I was in Europe. We had a friend had a car. We could go drive on the Autobahn, which was a wild experience because when you see like a cruddy Ford that all of a sudden can do 120, I mean that's you're in Europe. And so, you know, you'd be on the highway and you do these incredible speeds flying down the road to like Stuttgart or something like this. And all of a sudden in the left-hand lane, and by the way, in Europe, you can't do that dawdling in the left-hand lane stuff. You have to be in the right-hand lane. Unless you are passing someone, you have to be in the right-hand lane for this reason. Every once in a while, you'll see a glint in the back rearview mirror. And next thing you know, here is some Euro trash in some sort of piece of Italian sports car with reflective glasses and a cigarette kind of dangling off their lip. And he's sitting behind and he'll slow down at your car. And you're doing like 110. And he'll slow down. He'll kind of look towards you, look ahead, and then it like a rocket ship taken off. They're gone. It's unbelievable. That is the guy that I saw on Friday night. That was the first time I said, wow, that guy just passed me like I was standing still. And I was doing, you know, it was past Lexington. We were starting to get past that construction zone. I think it was up close to 70 miles an hour, maybe 75. And he passed me like I was standing still. This is why I'm concerned about. I mean, and I've seen this. I was out on 394. And all of a sudden there was a group of them of just, and you know, just white middle age, okay, sorry, the crisis is kicking in, but whatever. And they're out, they're driving from Minneapolis down 394 out towards Lake Minnetonka in their cars, and they're kind of zipping in and out of traffic like it's some sort of video game. What scares me is I understand that when this is all over, when coronavirus is all over, the pandemic's all over, that we're going to have – some people are not going to go back to work, that the culture of work is going to be changing and school is going to change. We're going to have people who are not doing that. But we're going to go back to traffic. We're going to go back to a world where there is a slowing down in the evening and there's slowing down in the morning with drive time. We are. And these guys are so used to driving 80, 90, 100 plus miles an hour. I kind of fear for some of the crashes we're going to see when things start getting back to normal. Because it would be like those crashes in Europe when a car was going 120 miles an hour. And you look and like 100 yards off the highway, there's a car wrapped around a tree. It's like, first of all, how to get that far? Second of all, how to get that far with that much speed that it wrapped itself around a tree? Ugh. That's what we're going to see. I'm a little concerned. Have you been on the roads any of the times when, you know, Mario Andretti pops up next to you?
Oh, I used to live by 394, and yeah, nothing better than hearing the constant screech of car wheels constantly going through. But I think you're onto something there. If not the accidents, I think we could see definitely an increase in road rage of these guys thinking, why are you only going 65?
And, of course, these are the most douchiest of guys too. They really,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
Just road rage is like their middle name. Mm-hmm. Dexter Road Rage Smackleton or something like that. State Patrol is pledging to crack down on speeders after a dangerous and deadly year on Minnesota roadways. By the numbers, troopers wrote 1,068 citations to drivers doing more than 100 miles an hour in 2020, a 100% increase from 2019. As you guys like to complain about problems in Minneapolis, that rate, no, my God, that is insanity. It's twice as many people.
You know what? I'm actually surprised that's not higher with the number of cars I hear all the time.
And that's 100 miles an hour or more. Mm. It doesn't say anything about the people that are doing like 85 or 90.
Yeah.
That's the ones who are caught doing 100. Oh, God, that's going to be scary. That's going to be scary when that – oh, it's going to be – I'm on 169. There's a stretch from Excelsior Boulevard that runs down to Crosstown where they here they come.
Oh, I'm well
aware.
Street
racers. Yes. Vin Diesel's here. Oh, great. Fast and Furious. We're too stupid to make another – stop making these movies, that sort of thing. Anyway, so there's one road story. Be careful out there. And just if they – you can't stop people from killing themselves on these roads. If they're going to want to do it, they're going to want to do it. The one that caught me off guard, Bruce Springsteen. You just saw Bruce. He was the Jeep ad, right, for the Super Bowl.
Was he? Was he the G-pad?
He was the G-pad, and talking about there's a church in the heart of America, and this is where people too divided. Of course, you start off with a Christian church. I'm going to just call it as it is, Bruce. You know, you know, it's okay. You know, wasn't there a bowling alley next to the church or something you could have round up? No, you went with the Christian church. Okay, fine. But Bruce Springsteen was part of a Jeep ad on Super Bowl, which is, I think, a little bit of an odd story considering this, the real news that broke today. Springsteen is facing a drunken driving charge in Jersey. He was arrested on November 14th in part of the Gateway National Recreation Area in the New Jersey coast. A spokesperson from the National Park Service confirmed on Wednesday the park is a narrow beach-ringed peninsula with views across the bay to New York City. It is about 15 miles north of Asbury Park, where Springsteen got his start as a musician and band leader, and he was later made famous with his debut album, Greetings from Asbury Park. Springsteen received citations for driving while under the influence, reckless driving, and consuming alcohol in a closed area. Spokesperson for Springsteen was cooperative. Needless to say, I'm wondering, do you think, okay, so the Jeep ad, you know, if you're making an ad for the Super Bowl, clearly the ad is getting recorded and all that stuff, you know, in October, November, probably October latest. It's got to go to post-production. They got to clean it up, edit it, make sure it looks real nice. Any voice work they have to do on it. Then they got to, obviously has to go through approval of the Jeep people. I mean, in case of this ad, it's the Jeep ad. So I'm going to guess it was October. I wonder if this happened and they got them to hold the story until after the Super Bowl, knowing that he's, you know, you don't want to have a guy who's just known for drinking and driving doing an ad for Jeep. You know, by the way, Bruce, if you're cold, you're wearing a jacket in that car. You might want to put the cover on the top of the Jeep. I don't know if you understand that. Well, never mind. I wonder if they did. I wonder if this story was buried. And they deal. I mean, you wonder because, you know, obviously if they got to the point where they'd recorded the TV ad and they put all the money in for it and they got to get an ad ready for the Super Bowl and all of a sudden the star of the ad has a drinking and driving thing. I wonder if the reason why we're hearing about it now is because of that. We'll have to find out. Hopefully just a one-time lapse of judgment. Hopefully it's a one-time lapse of judgment. I would hate to think that Bruce has got a larger problem here, but you know, needless to say, it's not cool, dude. It's not cool. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. Minnesota coronavirus update before we get into Jeff Stein. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein in about 8 minutes or so. Minnesota expects a 5% increase next week in shipments of vaccine against COVID-19, an infectious disease that has caused at least 6,319 deaths and has been found through diagnostic testing in 469,905 state residents. The tolls include 11 deaths and 677 infections newly reported Wednesday by the Minnesota Department of Health. I'm not exactly sure why this next point was left out of the Star Tribune story, but Bring Me the News had this. An update from the Department of Health reveals that one of the people that did die was a child, 5 to 9 in Chippewa County, died of coronavirus. It's the second case of a child death from COVID-19, the first reported by the health department in July. No children between 10 and 18 have died from the disease. That's kind of one of the reasons why when you look at the vaccine schedules, they're the ones that are kind of at the end, is the kids that are, you know, especially, you know, 16 and younger. But this is, you know, this is a disease that can kill children. I understand that there's a lot of people out there that like to, you know, diminish the losses within the elderly community. But we shouldn't be doing that, and we shouldn't think to ourselves that, oh, you have to be 60 or older to die of this. My goodness, man, a lot of people have died that have not been in that category, those older categories, the greatest generation and the baby boomers. So, you know, just you got to be careful about this, and you can't just think that this is going to go away quickly here. 9 people aged 20 and 29 have succumbed to the disease, according to health department data. The child's identity and hometown had not been released, nor is it clear the child had any underlying health conditions. It would seem to me that the fact that one of the people who had passed away was a child, it would be a significant part of the story, but the Star Tribune didn't feel that way. State Department Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm said next week increased supply of the two-dose Pfizer and Moderna coronavirus vaccine should be up 28% from what Minnesota received 3 weeks ago. She said it will help as Minnesota completes its initial priority of immunizing 500,000 healthcare workers and long-term care residents, expands vaccine access to more than 1 million senior citizens and educators. What we really need is more of a doubling, tripling, quadrupling, Malcolm said, noting that the latest increase is only another few thousand doses a week, which when we spread it across the whole state doesn't feel like a lot of individual communities, but it is surely to step it in the right direction. As of Wednesday, Minnesota reported that more than 583,602 first doses of COVID-19 had been administered by providers in the state, and that 168,495 people had completed the two-dose series. That means nearly 4% of the target population of Minnesotans 16 and older received both doses. So I did the math on that. That is 4,100,000. 4,100,000 residents is what is in their target population. If you go with 4% is 168,000, then 100% would be 4 million. So there's – in a state of 5.5 million, that is – you know, must be, I'm presuming, elderly, people with pre-existing conditions, teachers, frontline workers, the vast majority of us at that point. I mean, it's going to be, you know, well over 80% – you know, close to 80% of the state at that point. So if it's 4,100,000. So that's their goal. By the way, the clinical trials show that the vaccines are 95% effective when administered on schedule. The Walz administration has pressed for faster vaccine administration by challenging providers to give 90% of shots within 3 days of receiving them and all shots within 7 days. Now, this was a story on NPR this morning on their news site, which basically was talking about, well, are we doing well? Well, we are definitely, when you're looking at the distribution of vaccines, because this is a big thing Republicans have been screaming about, that the vaccines are not getting out fast enough. Well, we are, at 87% of the vaccines are administered within 3 days, and 95% of them are administered, or 97, might even be 97%, are administered within 7 days. So, and we are, I think, the 10th best in the nation at that. So we're doing okay. We need more vaccine, but that's the story of the entire world right now. But the people, when we're getting vaccine, it is this idea, this notion Republicans are kind of floating in the state, which is that the governor held a media briefing at Jones Harrison residence in Minneapolis on Tuesday, partially to recognize that vaccination of staff and residents in nursing homes and assisted living facilities in Minnesota should be completed by the end of February. Residents of such facilities make up 64% of the COVID-19 deaths in Minnesota. That would be a big step. That would be a huge first step. We're getting there. It's taken us a while, but we're getting there. Doesn't mean it's not going to be quick, but hopefully before too long we'll be kind of back into some sort of normal routine, and that will be a good thing. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein, when we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books, also at totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Reports, his daily show down there in Iowa. And, of course, he joins us from KXEL at Cedar Falls, Waterloo, where he brings us the Iowa Politics Report. And, Jeff, I don't know if you've just seen this, but they're going through the security footage as we speak of what was going on in the Capitol. The same officer, Eugene Goodman, this is the guy that faced off with the mob and allowed Vice President Pence to escape. He runs right before that moment. He runs into Mitt Romney, orders the senator, you need to go the other way now. So he saves Mitt Romney's life, because Mitt Romney would have been torn apart by that mob. Saves Mitt Romney's life, then saves the vice president. How is this guy not get one of the statues? We have to get a statue of this guy, because my God, how many people did he just save himself that day while standing down one man against a mob?
Well, the thing that is really interesting about what we are seeing, I don't know that it's going to change the outcome of this situation.
Oh, no,
but
it's
the
not.
American
no, no.
people, the American people are going to get a much better sense of what happened because we're for the first time seeing the footage. I saw some tweet where someone was, you know, as if it was breaking news, saying that Nancy Pelosi was taken to an undisclosed location away from the Capitol grounds. Yeah, they all were. I mean, I didn't think that was a big secret, that the vice president was spirited to one location. Grassley, who was then the president pro tem, and the majority and minority leader and the speaker, they were all taken to a separate location. You know, Grassley told me that he was taken there. It was about an hour outside of Washington, D.C., and then more of these leaders just kept showing up, and they all sat there and watched it on TV and were shocked by what they saw, because when they left, they had no idea of what was going on.
Well, and I think
it's one of these things that, you know, as more of this comes out and you see it, what's the rebuttal? I mean, I don't think we know how deep that breach was that day.
Better way to say it for you, if I can. Please. The we were all aghast by what we saw just in the day and days after January 6th. What we're seeing now goes beyond that to fury, to seeing how close this riled up, incited mob by Trump came to getting. And this is the thing, which is crazy. The Democrats are the ones who are like, for God's sakes, they were going to kill Mike Pence. They're going to have the Speaker Pelosi. Yes. They would have killed Grassley. They would have gone. Mitt Romney now was in the verge of getting attacked. We had numerous House members cowering in the balcony trying to get out of there. We could have, this could have, by just the, and I'll say the miracle of God, for goodness sakes, we didn't have a body count hung politicians dangling from the third floor window of the Capitol. For God's sakes, we are dang lucky that this didn't go even worse than it already did.
I think there is one thing that, regardless of how one feels about the impeachment trial itself, I think there is one thing that people on both sides of the political aisle can agree. And that is, many of the people who were there, who did the most heinous acts, the ones who came with a preconceived plan, with weaponry, with all of this, they were thinking that that is what Donald Trump wanted them to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean he said it that day. And you and I have talked about this on this program. I think there has been too much focus on what was said that day. Now, obviously, those on the right use it as a way to say that he is that he's not guilty because, oh, look, you know, they were premeditated. So nothing he said that day could have mattered. OK, well, what about the month before the 6 months before year before?
If I can stop right there, because there's a point today which I thought was one of the best points by the House they laid out in their prosecution. And that was in the days before the election. So this is, I think it's November 1st. We have the footage of a Biden bus in Texas being attacked, like a la Road Warrior style, by a series of Trump trucks with Trump flags on them. They're trying to run the bus off the road. And not only was, I mean, for God's sakes, we're lucky nothing bad happened there. But the allocates and Brett, what exactly did that tweet say? Do you remember what that tweet said about the things that I love Texas or something like that?
Yeah, he said, oh, I love you, Texas.
I love you, Texas. I mean, clearly you had a threat of violence and Trump is saying that's exactly what I love. And I mean, you have this pattern. New York Times, Washington Post, both of them have done stories on all the things he was saying from the day of the election, even before the election, about how the election was going to get stolen from him. All the way running through what you get on the 6th in his things. Let's march on the Capitol. Let's go get them over there. We have to be strong. The stuff there, that's just the cherry on top of the sundae, because the reality is that he had fermented this incitement for months.
And this is the thing that's why I keep wanting to take the statements on January 6th out of it, because the worst actors could not have been caused to act solely by his comments that day. You wouldn't come with weaponry otherwise, right? The premeditated fashion of it means that it was the stuff from weeks and months before. And that's the stronger case, that the things he said led them to believe they were acting in his name, in his right, license, and title.
Well,
and how many of these said, well, I did it because the president invited me and I assume he'll pardon me? They believe it.
Well, and to back up your point even further, I mean, when you look at this, particularly the Oath Keepers, Proud Boys, and the Three Percenters that were there, one of the things, if you look at the timeline for the New York Times where they take the footage, you see the Proud Boys. I mean, Trump's still speaking over the ellipsis.
Yes,
the Proud
yes.
Boys were attacking they had already started to attack the Capitol because they didn't come in from the speech. They came in from the other side of the Capitol. So there was there. But let's remind everyone, what did he say in the debate? Proud Boys, stand back and stand by. Clear. This is, you know, this was Trump's mob. And when he comes on out, I mean, and he's, you know, at the end of this saying, I love you. You know, we were in the right, but you need to go home now. I mean, it just – it's gut-wrenching to watch, but this was – and I think there was the Washington Post broke down his whole strategy of the court cases in each individual state, the attempt by Paxton to overthrow it, then the attempt to get Pence to change the Constitution and do something he has no legal authority to do, and then when Pence told him he couldn't, it became fine. It was the jilted boyfriend. If you're not going to love me the right way, then I'm going to force you to love me, and that's when he sent the mob on in.
And again, it comes back to there's been too much focus on the day of. And by the way, the stand down, stand aside, whatever the phrase was, they were selling T-shirts with that slogan
yes.
on it, we now know. Okay, so let's assume for – this is the lawyer in me, all right? Let's assume for the sake of argument that when the president said that during the debate, he did not mean it the way that it was being taken. Okay, once you learn they're selling T-shirts with the slogan, that should be a clue that it's being taken that way. And you then have an affirmative duty – to try to rectify the situation. Let's say, for example, again, he's sitting at the White House as the mob is taking over the Capitol. He has an affirmative duty to immediately get out in front of that and say, if you think you're doing this in my name, get away, go, leave. But yet, what's the story that you and I heard about and discussed on this station the day of? People were saying to him inside the White House, you got to do something. He's having lunch, watching TV and cheering.
Yeah.
Because of what's going on. Now, did he realize it was going to get this bad? Okay. There may be points at which he sobers up a little and says, okay, this is not what I meant to have happen. But the point is, when you are the public servant, when you are the elected official, when you're the leader of the doggone free world, you have got to, when you recognize that things are not going the way that they were supposed to or that you intended, you have that affirmative duty mm-hmm. to get out there and call a halt to it. And that's something that he did not do. So did he, through his actions over a period of time, lead a group of people to feel emboldened? I don't know that anybody can dispute that. Now, whether it rises to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors, does it rise to the level of an impeachment, et cetera? That's a whole different issue, but
it does. I mean, he was impeached. He was impeached while he was still in office. The trial's happening now. But it did.
All I'm saying is this. You separate that part of it. Who can dispute that he, through his statements and actions, led people to engage in that behavior? He can't deny that, can he?
We got also have the damning evidence that the vice president was the one that finally called the National Guard out. That even though the Capitol was being attacked, that the president himself did not call out the National Guard, that it was the vice president who finally said, enough's enough, we're taking care of this. That was it. Let's go back to yesterday.
Please.
I think starting with the House prosecution – they made two points here that I thought were especially point. You know, the Republicans, we already know that they're going to acquit him. We already know this. They're bragging about it, for goodness sakes. Yeah. But the reality is that, you know, they clearly had a point where they said, no, this is constitutional. You can do this. The founding fathers wanted you to do this. I mean, the quote from John Quincy Adams, yeah, you should hold me. You should be able to impeach me for everything I did while I was in office until the day I die. I mean, there clearly was the mentality of the founding fathers was that it did not matter what happened and when it happened, that you should be held accountable even if you were out of office. And the other point that I thought was exceptionally made is, so you're saying that the last month, January of any given president's term, they can basically do anything and you can't impeach them? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And when he put it out there like that, of course it doesn't make any sense. You have to be able to hold someone accountable even in their final days of office, or else you're just asking for chaos to ensue, because the minute it becomes January 1st, they could hand Maine over to Russia and there's nothing anyone can do about it. So
well, that's a great loss.
Well, not really. I mean, the blueberries are nice. Now, but
– Okay. Now answer this counter that I have heard from some people.
Okay.
And I think, there's some merit to it. Don't you always have the threat of criminal prosecution for a president who, after he or in the future she knows that they will not be in office for whatever reason, term limited, defeated, don't you have the option of criminal prosecution to keep them in line before January 20th in a transfer of power?
2 points about that. First of all, it's presuming that you're, whatever the case may be, you would be able to get a trial against the person. He might leave and go to Russia or Saudi Arabia, and then do you have a trial in absentia? Or you don't have the people, you have a situation where the people who would be the necessary people to bring the charges are political hacks and they don't have to. So that is a big if on whether or not they would, plus the fact that most laws in most states don't apply to such things as incitement, attempting to overthrow the democracy itself. That is why the impeachment – I mean, this is a textbook example of why impeachment exists. You have a crime here which is Benedict Arnold. You're trying to undermine the foundation of the country itself. And if you don't treat that with the most – with the harshest penalty, which means the House and Senate themselves need to deal with this, expecting the lower district court of D.C. to basically be the sole person to deal with it. For goodness sakes, we're talking about a dead police officer. We're talking 140 injured police officers. We're talking the attempted assassination of the vice president, Speaker of the House, the Senate pro tem. You're talking about the attempted removal and destruction of the electoral ballot count and the undermining of democracy itself. I don't think that's anything that any regional court would ever be able to tackle.
Well, if you've got the federal – this is happening in the District of Columbia, which is a federal district, and the supervisory all the laws are with the United States. I mean, so arguably you could – I'm not saying it's exclusive, okay? But you could very well have a criminal prosecution.
Oh, and I think you Here's still can. That- I think you still can even after impeachment. It's just the question of whether you impeach. I mean, it's not an either or situation. You can. There's going to be there's going to be criminal charges. There's definitely going to be civil cases against Trump. And I think that if he wants to save his money, he's definitely going to have to get out of this country. But I think that those are future down the line. This is about what does the country's government. How does it treat an elected official who tries to overthrow the government? Do you just basically throw it down to a district court, or do you say to yourselves, this elevates itself beyond the level of a courtroom?
Well, and again, you have the concurrent, okay? And so I guess my answer to those who say it's not constitutional to do, well, all right, try the criminal procedure if you don't think it's constitutional to do. You do have these options. But this is where hypocrisy reigns supreme, something like this. Impeachment is, in theory, a political procedure. You've got the people on the right complaining about Senator Leahy, making comments about, I would vote to convict Trump. He's making the statement he would vote to convict Trump before he has heard the evidence as a juror, and they make a big deal about him being the presiding officer and then also a juror. Yet, it's okay for their 44 to say, there's no way we're going to convict. Mm-hmm. You can't have that both ways, right? I mean, you can't complain that the other side says, well, they've made up their mind without hearing evidence, when your side says the same thing.
If Trump himself came to the Senate floor, looked at the Republicans and said, I did it, and I'm doing it with a big smile, and I'll do it again if you put me back into office. If he did that, how many Republicans would still vote to acquit him?
30?
I'm around there. I'm 25 to 30, 25 to 30 for sure. And that's the insanity. Isn't it? Isn't that the craziest part of this whole thing? This was what the founding fathers never anticipated. A complicit large portion of Congress tolerating such anti-American behavior.
And they would do it by hiding behind the idea of precedent and he's already out of office. You would get 30 out of the 50 Republicans who, on your scenario, very nicely stated, they would still say, I don't care if he did admit he's already out of office and we don't want the precedent for the future. That's what they would do. There's just absolutely no question. What's frightening about the whole thing is the fact that I would love for this to play out so that the American people actually got to see the information like the videos from today and actually get real live information. But it's all being distilled in such a manner that, it's being promoted by political folks on both sides. And now make your point even stronger. If you could stomach most of the Trump attorney's presentations yesterday.
Oh, God.
I mean, he's the client watching. Now, again, as an attorney, I have been in court with a defendant next to me who would tug on my sleeve or scribble on a notepad and express their displeasure about things. Okay. I mean, that's, that's natural. So Trump's apparently, throwing his Diet Coke at the TV set in Mar-a-Lago. Well, don't anybody run with that. I'm making it up. But he was very upset.
Well, he sure would throw the chicken. He loves the chicken. So that's staying on the table. I'm sorry.
The guy came and installed the red button and the Diet Cokes came flying. Okay. But so he was very upset about his first attorney's comments, the one who said the House Democrats did a very nice job. Really? You're my advocate? I'm paying you for this? But this is even worse, okay? That was bad enough, the meandering and the, But then you get Attorney Schoen, who's been on the team more than 5 minutes, 10 minutes, not more than, more than five, but not more than 10, because it's a revolving door of attorneys there at Trump land. But he said, in defense of, what is his name, Castor, I believe, in defense of his rambling presentation, he said, well, he wasn't planning to go today, so I'm sure that it'll be tightened up when we get further in the case. Wait a second. This is a trial of a former president of the United States, and you put up as your lead counsel someone who looked around and said, what, you want me to go first? I'm not ready for today. How does that happen?
I'll tell you what. Let's take a quick break and touch back on the defense team here because, yeah, they're a little out of their league. Jeff Stein joining us right now. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us. Jeff, we watched a lead lawyer, have a press conference at a landscaping company and then spring a leak at his next one. He looks like the return of Perry Mason compared to this crew. Is this just literally the fact that this Trump's lawyers are so bad at this? The fact that he's burned so many bridges with any legitimate law firm that he basically had, I think these guys are out of South Carolina or Georgia or somewhere, that this is where they're at. They're taking like regional lawyers that are looking to make the big time.
One of the lawyers working for Donald Trump sued him last year.
I did not know that.
Yes. Filed suit against Donald J. Trump. Now, this is...
I like the cut of that guy's jib. He'd sue me. I need him on my side.
See, there was the old story about Jerry Falwell sued Larry Flint, Hustler magazine,
yes.
Right, for an ad parody. And it went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and Larry Flint won. And Jerry Falwell famously said to his associates, who are his guys' lawyers? Because I'm going to hire them in the future. Because they beat my guys, and I want the guys that beat my guys. Okay, so I don't understand this one exactly. You sue Donald J. Trump in calendar year 2020 about the election, and then you're defending him? I get a paycheck. I get it. And every defendant deserves – because, again, as a lawyer, I know every defendant deserves a zealous representation. But you just got to think, if you're – if you've supposedly got gazoodles of money, and that's a technical phrase, and you're the former president of the United States in a rather historic presentation to a tribunal, don't you think you could find somebody as opposed to saying, yeah, he sued me last year, but I'm sure there are no hard feelings. He'll do a great job. All right.
One final point here, and if you're the House, this is where I think stuff like this is where you focus on. It's now been revealed at least $3.5 million made its way from Trump's reelection campaign, as well as also associated groups with his campaign to the rally itself. At least $3.5 million. That has been tracked down. It becomes a very difficult thing for him to say this was not me when all of a sudden the money for the rally, if a good portion of that came from Trump himself, well, then there you go. He set this up.
Well, you still have to show that he knew that they were going to be violent, but then it goes back to the common standard. I mean, when you make certain statements, you have to believe, especially if you're the president of the United States, you have to believe that people are going to listen to us. So it comes down to reasonableness. Did you reasonably expect that your statements would lead to this kind of criminal activity? And if so, then we do hold you responsible. If it's not a plausible interpretation, well, then you're off the hook. Well, again, just listen to his statements. And you look at these people and they honestly believe that it was an engraved invitation to come to Washington and do this.
And many of them have already said this in their defense, is that we're here because Trump told us to come and fight. And so we came here to do that. So, he did incite them. He knew what was going to happen, especially when he went out there and vilified Pence. That was clearly part of his goal. Jeff Stein, once again, I will spotlight this interview. Find his books at Next Chapter Books and TotallyIowa.com. Jeff, we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Have a good one, Matt.
Take care. We will come on back. Hour two of the Matt McNeil Show coming up in just a moment right here on AM 950. Are the Senate Republicans just going to send Mike Pence a "we're very, very sorry" Valentine's basket for allowing the insider of the mob that tried to kill you from having any kind of – here we go. God.
Our bad.
Gee willikers. Hey, I wish we could have done anything to hold him accountable, but, those are our voters. God. I didn't even get to the point 150,000 Republicans have changed their political registration since the riots. 150,000. And let me say – in some states, that would be a difference maker. Don't get me wrong. I guarantee you in Wyoming, Idaho, and in parts of the Dakotas that this only endeared him more. But in a lot of places, especially places like Ohio and Pennsylvania and Michigan, this whole cuddling up and snuggling with terrorists is not playing.
Oh, you're right. North Carolina easily could have had a Democratic senator if those people had left the party before that election day.
Meanwhile, on Fox News, and by the way, the video footage, I'll post some of it a little bit later on. The video footage today, just disturbing. Fox News, their entire network, it seems like, is only focused on the Dallas Mavericks owner saying he doesn't want to play the national anthem, something which is a moot point because the NBA already came back and told him you have to play it. So there is no story there, but that is their main focus. It's just predictable. And if the right wing people in this country, what you have to do is you have to kind of post this stuff out. And yeah, I understand that there's a lot of people out there that don't like to get political, but you have to understand there are people who only have opinion validations. That's it. They don't get any news whatsoever. And they're getting the news right now is that this is ludicrous as arguing, well, guess what? Nancy Pelosi was really behind this. Aha. Meanwhile, hey, let's talk about the guy that basically washed his hair with the dog shampoo. And that is where they're at. You got to post this stuff. You got to go on out there. You got to fight. I mean, that is part of it. And I understand it might lead to some people being a little upset, but you gotta kind of got to do this. Do you know where Shooks Township is?
Shooks Township? Is this Minnesota?
It is in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Highway 71. It's apparently it's U.S. Highway 1. I don't think it's U.S. I think it's Minnesota Highway 72 and Minnesota Highway 1, which would place it very northwestern part of the state.
I don't even know those highways. Yeah. So.
One runs – Minnesota 1 runs across the top of the state. That goes from the North Shore – past Pelican, Lake Pelican, and then kind of cuts across Togo. You get to go to Togo and see the what six bars and one church. That's all. That is the entire town of Togo.
Really?
Yeah.
Six bars and one church.
The last gas station I've ever was at, where I actually had one of those old school gas things where you put the gas pump in your car, you clunked the thing over. And the dials actually spun.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's up there as well. Is that Tofty? Is that in Tofty? That is – it's a run. I've done that run a few times. I used to live over in Bemidji, and that would hit right around the – that would hit 71, not 72, 71 right below Black Duck, I think it was, and I'd shoot down to Bemidji from there. But this is up at Shooks Township, and we'll say it, they were all shook up.
Oh, man.
Sorry. The semi-truck driver lost control of his vehicle, crashed through the Shooks Town Hall building at 5:45 on Tuesday the 9th. The driver, 64-year-old Russell Jolly from Winnipeg, Manitoba, operating a Peterbilt semi-truck southbound on U.S. Highway – or I think it's Minnesota Highway 72. He failed to stop at Highway 1 intersection, and then he left the roadway in a Peterbilt truck. He careened through the Shooks Town Hall, which is located at 35107 Highway 72, or it was, rather, I should say. The building was unoccupied at the time, thank the Lord. Jennifer and Eric Johnson owns the Hooked on Shooks Bait Shop in Shooks Township. They were first to arrive at the scene of the accident. Considering the size of Shooks, I don't think it was a far run. The couple said the impact shook their whole building, which is located about two blocks down the road from the town hall. It sounded like a bomb went off when he hit, or sounded like a semi went through the town hall. I think you don't bomb. It's a semi going through the town hall. It makes its own unique sound. It sounded like a bomb went off. It literally shook the building. I looked out the window and told my husband, somebody just went through the town hall, Jennifer said, as they're going through their bait shop. Eric approached the driver who, after regaining consciousness, yikes, gave a thumbs up. And then, upon looking around, asked if had he hurt anyone. He didn't respond right away, Eric said. Once he gave me the thumbs up, I walked out of the truck, and he was saying, did I kill anybody? Is everybody okay? And I told him it was just a town hall. The Johnson said they were glad that no one was inside the building at the time and that their first instinct was to make sure everyone was safe. The two said as of 9:30 a.m. Wednesday morning, crews had been back on the scene for a couple of hours. We were beginning to remove the pieces of the truck from the town hall building. The semi-truck appeared to be part of the Thomas Wright Transportation Services fleet. Sure, they're enjoying this kind of publicity. The transportation company with the terminal in Winnipeg that specializes in truckload shipments from the Midwestern United States to Western Canada, according to its website. We'll tell the fastest route we can, which might in some be through the Shooks Township Town Hall. There you go. So be careful. You might get shook in Shooks. Oh. I'm sorry.
Oh, you spent all day working on these.
Oh, no, I didn't, really. If you listen to them, I didn't, really. No. 952-946-6205. So I asked a friend, and I don't know if we know this for fact. Do we know if Alibi Bar and Grill in Lakeville is open even anymore?
Well, you could Google it, but I don't know if that would tell us accurate information. Yeah.
Not sure. Considering the clientele that hangs out in the place, so I'm not exactly a fan. The reason I ask is, of course, we mentioned yesterday the Yosemite Sam that is co-owner of the place, who is once again somehow got bail after jumping out of a window with two guns, a gun in each hand, as he was attacking police. Somehow that guy got bail, but then decided to go to the Rosemont Jimmy John's and attack the manager for asking that he and the co-owner, the Zarza of Alibi, that they basically wear a face mask while in the facility. And so I ask about that for a reason, is because there have been a few other places in the state who as well have tried to fight Governor Walz's emergency powers to try to keep as many of us safe, and have – well, they've done spectacularly horrible. I don't quite know what these people thought was going to happen. It's a pandemic, and I'm going to once again reiterate something I have said numerous times. It's a pandemic. This is going to require a lot of really hard choices. What's to like? I mean, that quite literally is could be the theme of 2020. What's to like? But you had to make harsh choices because we had seen in state after state that did not put mask mandates in, that did not go down and try to shut down, you know, the businesses when the things got really rough, who were out there telling people, don't worry about social distancing. As a matter of fact, come out and have fun. Those states went through hell and killed, and the decisions pretty much almost universally by Republicans in those states got their citizens killed and infected with coronavirus at far higher rates than you saw in other states that were trying to take this seriously. No one wants businesses to be shut down. They just don't. So acting as if one side is happy because they shut down business, you're just being a bitter, stupid, angry person, and you're not helping the problem at this point. What's to like? I have plenty of people I know who run their own business, who have been sad, who have said, I wish I could open up, but I do not want my place of business to be a cell of infection, for goodness sakes. But that didn't stop some of these people, and I'm just perplexed at what they thought was going to happen. Now, for the record, it is constitutionally legal for, under emergency powers, for Governor Walz to regulate businesses. It is perfectly legal. He has been sued multiple times, and it's been every time he's won, basically, he has the authority to do this. He was given the emergency powers. We had to deal with this crisis. We're still dealing with this crisis. And trust me, I don't think he wants them anymore as much as anyone else, but he's going to make sure that we do this right the first time as opposed to put Republicans in charge, because I can tell you right now, if any Republican in this state was in charge during this crisis, it would be 1,000 times worse than it already was in this state. Absolutely. Just they'd be patting themselves on the back. The schools are open as 70% of the teachers in the state are sick, and saying, didn't we do a great job? But these business owners, I guess they thought that people in the community were going to be like, I love their onion rings. They're the best onion rings ever. They give me such pleasure. How can the governor shut them down? We're going to march on the Capitol and get this business. No. Who doesn't love a good onion ring, by the way? Oh, delicious. No, that's not going to happen. As a matter of fact, it seems as if I basically just got a message from friend Jackie who said, no, it looks like they're still open, and the term, well, an F word describing the place. Salute, Jay. Love ya. Apparently they are. Well, some of these businesses have come into some problems. Now, Alibi is going to lose their – I'd be shocked if they don't lose their liquor license, and that should shut them down. They're going to be gone. There's a place down in Albert Lea named The Interchange, and my God, you need to go over to The Interchange and watch the videos. Holy God! That woman is cray-cray, man. She is just, we are fighting for democracy and getting you, you know, discounts on chicken wings. I don't know what she's doing. I just, but she's in big trouble because now not only is she in trouble with the state, which she's got a lot of legal problems for, but she's also in trouble with the city of Albert Lea. And she actually posted one video where she thinks the county sheriff didn't deliver the ordinances, the violations to her because the county sheriff was taking her side. When someone pointed out to her, it's like, well, your business is in Albert Lea. This is a city issue. Henceforth, that's why Albert Lea cops came to your door, even though you don't live in the city of Albert Lea. And she almost didn't want to believe that that was the case. Interchange, this is the place I talked about a few weeks ago where the woman got a government got a check to help businesses get through this pandemic. She went on out, bought food for a stick it to Governor Walz party and thought she was going to have a big street party and everyone's going to show up with free food. And you know, once again, a business having trouble paying their bills because they say they need help staying open. They get a check from the state to help them tide them over, and she immediately spends that money on food for a party, which she really wasn't allowed to have. She initially called it a party. Then she said, well, we have to call it a protest, and then basically seemed to be shocked when they said, well, you still can't stay open past 10 o'clock. And so she's been trying to fight this in a different – I mean, she's fighting a losing cause. I mean, she lost the game already, and she's trying to win a fight here. They started a GoFundMe page for her legal bills. They were looking for $30,000. They're up to $4,000 plus now. They're not going to get $30,000 for this. She also is, like I said, facing multiple charges. Not only is she getting sued by the state, but she's getting sued by the local city as well. Well, we can say – so long, Interchange. I don't think they're going to be reopening. And you want to know the truth is, any business that is so absolutely self-centered and does not care about the well-being of the community, I don't want you out there. Trust me, like I said, I know a lot of business owners who have had a miserable time during this. And I 100% empathize with them. But at the end of the day, all of them say the same thing. Well, I'd like to open up, but at the same time, I don't want people to get sick at my place. And so if I have to stay shut down, we'll do the best and hopefully we can get through it. The Interchange is not one of those places. This is posted up on their Facebook page. Because I am under threat of arrest and illegal and unlawful compulsion. Okay. I am temporarily closing the doors of the business as we establish legal foundation. Good luck with that, by the way. We are far from finished. Really? I think you're finished. I don't want to call the game early here, but I think that when the fans all went home in the stands and the team bus left, I think the game's over. The fight for rights and freedoms continue. We continue on while we build winning strategy. Nothing says winning more than shutting your doors. Winning! Your prayers and support are much needed. Donations appreciate to win this fight. Let me tell you about prayers, okay, really quick here. Just a side, quick side note. I'm a Catholic here. Jesus healed a lot of sick people. He wanted us to care for the sick and needy. He didn't say, hey, care for the sick and needy, but hey, wait a second. 2-for-1 rail drinks? Get that bar back open! That was not Jesus. I'm just going to let you know, Jesus would be on the side of trying to keep as many people safe as possible. Just letting you know, you might want to crack open that Bible. First four, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, tells you a lot, okay? Stay tuned on FB and our website soon to be updated, The Interchange. So long, farewell, avidas, and goodbye. Like I said, no one wanted to shut down these businesses. If you were just upset, I would be on your side and saying, you know what? I can understand it. But to see you take taxpayer dollars that were given to you to try to get through just so you're going to have a party and rub it in Tim Walz's face and then see you say, I'm going to sue everybody. This is about freedom. No, this is about you. And you are losing. And you've lost. And that's just that.
Oh, I was just going to expand on your point. Yeah, about the prayer part is just so messed up that she's throwing in there.
Jesus loved the onion rings, man. Did you know that? That was the Last Supper, man. If you look at the table there, they had those jalapeno poppers, those Southwest egg rolls, and a bunch of onion rings. That's how they went out that night.
You just think of how messed up that is, that you're telling someone to pray for having onion rings and chicken wings instead of people who are dying in a pandemic, for instance.
That tells you everything right there, that this is only about them. They don't care about anyone else. And, you know, I hope there comes a moment when she sits there and says, who's with me? Let's go! And she turns around and there's no one there. Adios. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. No one wanted to shut things down, for goodness sakes. No one did. No one did. But we had to keep people safe, for goodness sakes. And, you know, when I started seeing the parents say, I don't care. Those teachers need to watch my kid during the day. I was like, wow, that was some selfish stuff. And little did I know that was the beginning of it. There's some businesses that have gone through it. Now, once again, we're, of course, huge here on Shop Local. Help Shop Local by all means. I'm going to talk about the Mall of America. Now, I understand that's full of a lot of national chains and stuff like this, but no one has been more shocked at the fact that that mall has been one of the top three tourist attractions in the entire United States. It is unbelievable. And so – You know, we as a community need to have those tourism dollars coming on in. So I want to see them come back as well. From Axios and our friend Tori Van Oot, the nearly 11 months after its temporary pandemic closure, foot traffic at the Mall of America in the Twin Cities appears to be way down. Despite the increase since reopening in June, average activity levels are 45% low the February 2020 baseline, according to cell phone data analyzed by geospatial analytics company Orbital Insights and provided to Axios. Mall America's recovery could have an especially significant impact on the state local economy. Within 40 million annual visitors in normal times, Mall America estimates it generates $2 billion in tax a year in economic impact in the state. Economic impact, I should say. About 10% of the city of Bloomington's property tax base comes from the mall alone. Don't think that that's not a factor there. And yeah, there are a lot of businesses in the mall that are not open right now, which is, you know, places that are shut down. But, you know, we need to get stuff back up and going. And, you know, so when I hear of these selfish businesses that even though every other restaurant or bar within a mile of them is doing the right thing, following the guidance of the state, And trying their best not to get as many people sick as possible, and they themselves are out there saying, no, you got to open everything up, because they're just, you know, they're where they're at. It's just disturbing. It's absolutely disturbing, and almost all the time it's people on the far right, and these are the people who claim to be the most Christian people. Oh, I'm Christian. Christian values. No, it's not. You're not even close. Selfishness was never a part of Christianity. It's just you. And so I look at places like the Mall of America. I look at the mom and pop stores, all the local restaurants we have here. I look at them and I say, you know, make sure when we get back up and running, get out there. I love the idea, by the way, of the stimulus check that they're looking at, which $1,400 plus, I think they're looking at $3,000 or was how much per kid? Is it $2,000 or $3,000 per kid?
I think it was $3,000.
$3,000 per kid? Be nice. And that would help a lot of people. A, first of all, pay your bills. I have no problem with that. If you know, this is not about you running out and buying something new. If you need that, most people need that money just to pay their rent, maybe pay their to pay their phone bill. By all means, please do. Please do. You get a few extra bucks out there. Get out into the local economy. Help those people out. And if I may suggest, I have been, you know, I was there last weekend. I'll post a picture of it. I was at the Mall of America last weekend. It's relatively safe. You know, you're just still, there's not that many people there. You can stay pretty much socially distanced from people. And considering it's what's it going to be, minus 15, minus 16 this weekend? It's going to be extra crispy. Well, if it gets down that cold, you're going to need some place. If you're going to go outside, go check them out. Help them out as well, because we're in this together. We are. And no, if you're one of these people that are out there saying, no, you got to do what I want. Well, no, then you're not in this together. And so on one side, I feel bad the interchange is going to probably have to shut down and might not ever come back. On the other side, it's, oh, gee, not the person that was trying to reopen during a pandemic. Oh, gee willikers. Boy, oh, boy, will they be missed. Is that enough sincerity for you? Yeah. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Dumb Republicans, when I do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, thank you to all the people with the very nice comments about the calendar. No one is more shocked than I am that I took those photos.
Oh, you're going to be shocked at this. I've had two people ask for your autograph on these things. Yep.
They think I can write. All right.
And as we talked about, we will not be selling those at a discount if you sign.
No, really. I mean, they're pretty much valueless once my signature goes on them. But I'd be happy to. Sure, I'll do that. Okay. It's a calendar. Of course, it's an 11-month calendar at this point. But, hey, who's counting? So if you still like to get that, help out the station. Of course, once again, radio station, like everyone else, was impacted dramatically by the pandemic. We're getting through this. The listeners, the members, you guys have been fantastic. Well, we came up with the calendar idea. If you made a donation of $50, one-time donation of $50, or you made a recurring donation of $25 a month, we'll send you a calendar. You can use it from this point forward for the rest of the year. Enjoy it. A lot of great photos in there I took, and you can still do that. Go to am950radio.com. AM950radio.com, and thank you very much for helping to support Progressive Radio in Minneapolis, St. Paul. 952-946-6205. A Senate panel approved a politically charged GOP-led bill to cut local government aid to Minneapolis, diverting the funding to reimburse law enforcement agencies that assist Minneapolis police during large demonstrations or extraordinary events. This is the Paul Gazelka. I'm trying to win the Republican gubernatorial nomination by basically going out of my way to be the biggest jackass I could possibly be. Now, I want to remind everyone of one little fact about this whole thing. They did this today, the day after Mayor Fry sent first responders to Buffalo, nowhere near Minneapolis, to help out with the shooting tragedy that happened out there. Mayor Fry stepped up and sent our first responders, emergency people, out to help out. And I said this yesterday, I'll say this again. If Buffalo, Minnesota was a Democratic town that was a strong Democratic vote, not only would you not be hearing about, you know, these nice tributes from the Republicans, they would be calling for the mayor and all the city council be replaced and attacking them for the shooting. That's who these people are. Now, I want to make sure we understand something here. They could introduce this bill to try to say if any community needs help from any other community's law enforcement, that they need to pay for that law enforcement. They're not saying that. So what they're saying is they're perfectly fine if, say, Little Falls needs to call on Brainerd for some of their police officers. that Little Falls might not pay Brainerd, they're perfectly fine with that. They're perfectly fine with the idea that, say, Grand Rapids needs help from the Hibbing Police Department. They are perfectly fine with Grand Rapids might not pay Hibbing for that those services, but they might ask for them. No, this is only about punishing Minneapolis because they say Minneapolis hasn't helped pay for the surrounding law enforcement used during the George Floyd riots. The measure passed the Senate subcommittee on property taxes Wednesday on a 3-2 party line vote, heads to the full Senate taxes committee next. The plan is to alternate to is an alternative to DFL Governor Tim Walz's proposal to create a $35 million state fund to reimburse law enforcement agencies that assist Minneapolis police during the upcoming Derek Chauvin trial. So once again, law enforcement agencies, Minneapolis police, who the Republicans say they support, they need a full bill for all law enforcement. I'm going to presume Hennepin County sheriffs in there as well. $35 million. That is what is needed. And the Republicans themselves are not going to give that money to the police department. Instead, they're going to pull more money away from the city of Minneapolis because, once again, it's my opinion that the Republicans want Minneapolis to burn so that they can basically use the fear copy, the fear commercials, to try to scare people into voting for Republicans in 2022. That's my theory. And I think I'm pretty damn right on that, by the way. But it's my theory. Republicans criticized Minneapolis leadership, saying their efforts to defund the police last year make it unfair for the city to ask for assistance now. Why? So you don't like a political stance made by some of the city council members. You're saying that the threat is not real. It's just like I said, they don't care about cops. You think, where's Paul Gazelka condemning what happened at the U.S. Capitol? Where's Paul Gazelka doing that? When's Kurt Dowd going to come on out and do that and condemn it and call for the immediate arrest of everyone involved in any assault on those police officers? When that's going to happen?
I did it in the silence of my own heart because I don't want to upset those people because I need those people to vote for me.
Hypothetically. It just is. It's disturbing. They don't care about the police. If they cared about the police, they'd help get that $35 million to help the police here. This is not about the police. They don't care about the Minneapolis police. And I find it interesting, by the way, this new stance of theirs of not caring about the Minneapolis police now that Bob Kroll is no longer in charge over there. Because that is almost an instantaneous reversal. Back in December, they were trying to get more money to the Minneapolis Police Department. Now that Bob Kroll is leaving, now they're saying, well, we're not going to give you money. As a matter of fact, we're going to take money away from the police department. State Senator Bill Weber, Republican Laverne, said this bill would encourage law enforcement departments to agree to provide mutual aid because the legislature would guarantee they would be compensated. Well, then make it a statewide bill. Don't just attack Minneapolis. Make it a statewide bill. Oh, that's right. You can't do that because it might actually be detrimental to the outstate communities. So you're just doing it to Minneapolis to make political points. Walz, by the way, has already activated the Minnesota National Guard to begin planning for the trial, seeking to prevent any violence or civil unrest. State Senator Matt Klein, DFL from Mendota Heights, criticized the legislation, saying it was offensive to punish the city and garnish its tax base to pay for mutual aid support. Klein backed Walz's proposal, saying the best way to support law enforcement is to plan ahead. So once again, I want to make sure we understand something. This has been what I've been talking about for the last week, and I have a feeling I'm going to be talking about this for months to come. The city of Minneapolis-St. Paul, the metro area itself, our tax dollars subsidize these outstate communities like Laverne, Minnesota. Our tax dollars in the metro area, in these counties, we basically give extra money. These rural counties, they don't have enough money in their local tax base. So hence, we are subsidizing these small counties in rural Minnesota with Minneapolis-St. Paul tax dollars. They can't take care of themselves, so they need Minneapolis-St. Paul to give them this taxpayer money. And not only that, but it's to – now we're at the point – not only are they taking more than their fair share – Not only are these rural Republican counties taking more than their fair share of tax dollars, on top of that, as Matt Klein has said, it's offensive to punish the city and garnish its tax base to pay for mutual aid support. You're now to the point where it's not enough that Paul Gazelka and the Republicans are taking more of our taxpayer dollars and taking it out to their rural counties because they can't afford their lavish lifestyle out in those county seats. So now they're trying to garnish our taxpayer dollars even more. Please, please. This is why we have to have the new state constitutional amendment that says your county can only get back the tax dollars you send to Minnesota. That's the amount that you send is the only amount you get. And if for you to get more, you need a two-thirds vote in both the House and the Senate. And I guarantee you this, because that's not going to hurt Minneapolis-St. Paul at all. Us getting all of our tax dollars back, sweet Lord, we will have a funding overflow in the metro area. Holy God, we'll have more than enough money to take care of police departments, parks, recs, roads, all that stuff. It will be great here. It won't be that great out in rural Minnesota, but when you get to the point where it's not enough that you're taking more of our taxpayer dollars and putting it into these rural counties as they rip on us and try to take more money from us, well, then it's time for harsher alternatives. And this is the alternative that needs to be put into place. You only get what you give. That would be the new standard. Oh, and I guarantee you that if that was the case, out in Laverne, why would you guys put that on us? We don't hate you guys. I'm sorry for trying to garnish the city of Minneapolis. We're apologizing. They would be begging us to not pass that. But you know what? It's too late. You're to a point now where it's not enough that you're taking more of our tax dollars to subsidize your lavish rural country, your rural county lifestyles. But now you're trying to garnish our tax base even further. Well, there should be some consequences, and a constitutional amendment would solve a lot of that. Basically, Klein backed Walz's proposal once again. The best way to support law enforcement is plan ahead. We're going to get more of this because Gazelka wants to run for president, for governor, or for dictator, or whatever position him and or Bob Kroll was alluding to that he was going to take over when the White House, I guess, was going to overthrow the governor or something like that. I have no idea what they were planning. But dictator, can I abbreviate that? No, I guess I can't. I can't, at least not here on this radio station. Maybe it's time, Brett, for a podcast. I can get a little more colorful with the language.
Indeed, yes.
952-946-6205. I also wanted to bring this up, which is pretty hilarious. Of course, we all know that Tom Emmer is the NRCC, the National Republican Congressional Committee. They've got a brand new plan to rein the momentum which they ended in 2020. Ignore everything that's going on right now with Donald Trump. Ignore it completely. Ignore the conspiracy theories, the firebrand freshmen. Just ignore all that. We're going to talk about the stuff that matters to people, said Tom, citing school reopenings and job security. Okay, now, all right. School reopenings. We're probably, sign on the cross. We might actually be having, if things continue to go as well as they are with the vaccinations, we might have schools reopen before the school year's out, which would be fantastic. I don't think there's any reason to doubt that at worst case scenario, September of this year, schools would be reopened. So Tom Emmer thinks that the anger and frustration at the pandemic that schools had to be closed will carry over from September of 2021 to November of 2022 as a firebrand issue that people will not be able to say, well, it was because of the pandemic, not because Tim Walz decided to shut schools down. I don't know if that's a good idea for you there, but hey, go with it, Tom. No, seriously, Good luck there. We'll follow through on the game plan. Hopefully people will allow us to operate under the radar because they won't believe us, and we can surprise all of you again 2 years from now. That's what Tom Emmer said. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy and congressional Republicans are just 5 seats away from seizing back the House following an unexpected election cycle when they netted a dozen seats. The GOP also controls the redistricting process in several key states, giving them the ability to draw favorable new maps and further fueling hopes of a Republican takeover. The president's party has lost an average of 22 House seats in midterms going back to over the past 40 years. In an exclusive interview with Politico on Tuesday, Emmer charted out his roadmap for the 2020 midterms, which includes a list of 47 Democratic seats to target and a messaging blueprint, tagged Democrats as job-killing socialists and stressed the GOP's commitment to reopening schools and protecting the gas and energy sector. The gas and energy sector? 63 Quinnipiac poll just came out 2 days ago. 63% of Americans want to re-enter the Paris Climate Accords. That's more than half. 63. Maybe you just need to get back to school. Democrats, this is not too hard, okay? So when – and I'm going to make sure we do not have the same mistakes of 2020. What you need to do, okay, when they accuse you of something, you know, that you hate Trump, you know, what you have to do is find your spine, say, damn right I don't like Trump. But I'm sure as heck not going to – I don't like Trump, and I don't like traitors to America, and I don't like terrorists, and I sure don't like QAnon. And I'm not going to sit here while these guys enable the traitors that attack the United States of America to sit there and act as if they're some sort of noble cause. Their biggest weakness is their base. Beat them over the head with it. Do not let them get – do not sit there and say – well, hold on a second. Let me give you my 15-point program of why I'm going to counterpoint this. And here's a 200-page, well-worded memo. No. Low-hanging fruit. Attack them for the QAnon stuff because they're all involved. And the reality is they can't alienate their base. So if you ever can get them on record saying, well, do you believe in giant Jewish space lasers? They don't want to discuss, they don't want to discourage that kind of thought process. Like, come on. No, do you? Don't you? You have to go on the attack, especially when Emmer's come up with this insanely weak plan. That's just, yeah. Reopening schools? Schools are going to be reopened for a year and a half by the time we get to that election. And you want to protect gas and gas jobs, oil industry? In an age when people want electric cars, when people want clean energy, when people want to be back in the Paris Accord? Okey-doke. Good luck with them. And then, like I said, you hammer them over the head with their love of QAnon, the far-right extremist terrorist traitors who attacked the United States. 2-946-6205. We'll stop by Glenn Grunhagen Manor when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Glenn Grunhagen is showing up again. Ooh, the human catcher's mitt, who stopped by my Facebook page, and I made him cry. Glenn, who, by the way, is wildly popular in his district because I guess they like crap representation. That'd be my guess. I don't know. He had a little bit of an announcement here at the Minnesota House Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. He heard Minneapolis, Sydney Jordan's pitch. Representative Glenn Grunhagen shared a personal story. My wife and I had COVID back in November. What? Did you ever hear about Glenn Grunhagen having being sick?
No, I did not at all.
I hadn't either. I was over it in about 48 hours, like a 48-hour flu. It's not the flu. It's not the 48-hour. And is there such thing as the 48-hour flu? I think you just have a milder version of the flu. But the flu is not coronavirus, needless to say, Dr. Glenn. My wife got very sick. She went to the doctor. They gave her prednisone and sent her home. Well, she took the prednisone for 3 or 4 days, and it didn't seem to help. Did seem to help some, and once it was gone, the COVID got worse. In fact, it got to the point where she had a hard time breathing. Dude, why didn't you get your wife to the hospital at this point? Yet we didn't see, they didn't want to admit her to the hospital. Okay. So she went online to some doctors, okay, who, and explained her circumstances. Doctors who prescribed her hydrochloroquine, the Trump stuff, the malaria drug, and a CPAC. Okay, we picked it up the next day from the local drugstore. She started taking that. 3-4 days later, she was better. This was where she was when she had the hard time breathing, all right? So, okay, and then it goes on to talk about the test results. Okay, first of all, I had never heard of Glenn Grunhagen being sick with COVID. Second of all, if this was in November, and I don't know the cross-contamination that was happening between the Senate and the House, but it makes me kind of wonder if in the House there indeed was there any interaction with the senators? Because once again, they had that big party where they all got sick, or it likely all got sick, and when that party that ended up killing off Jerry Ralph. I wonder if there was any contamination there. And was Grunhagen anywhere near the Capitol building or the Capitol offices? Regardless of what you think is a safe timeline, you're supposed to quarantine for 14 days. So from the day you got sick, you should have been quarantined. Well, and you were sick. So the minute you stopped being sick, you should have been quarantined for 14 days. He also goes on out on, and this is on Blue Stem Prairie, denying conspiracy theories and promotes absolute truth. I'm not going to necessarily read that, but he's basically, his argument is that we're all mistaken when we see Republicans who are snuggling up to these far-right groups like the Storm the Capitol group or something like this, that even though that horrible things are being said, threats are being made, violence is being encouraged at some of these rallies, the fact that the Republicans are there is not about that, that it's about it's you know, that they basically they're only supporting what they consider what is an absolute truth of what they're saying, not the other bad things. They're trying desperately, the Republicans, whether it's state Republicans or national Republicans, they're trying desperately to try to find some way for them to spin this embracing of the far-right extremist QAnon side of the party as something other than embracing extremism. That's what they're trying. They're trying to make it seem like this is really just some sort of misunderstood group. And the reality is it's not. Democrats, if you allow them to define themselves, they will. You have to be just as vocal out there addressing this and making sure they're correctly identified of exactly who these people are. We are back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.